Yo. What's up, weirdos? Unitor. This week, we got a fucking awesome-ass interview, man. Super shout-out to super producer Mr. Ryan James for hooking this one up. So gracious to know that dude. He's just all kinds of wonderful. If you're not already following Ryan James on Instagram, go check him out. He's always got something going, man. So good. This week, we were able to sit down and talk with one Buddy Cooper. That name should sound familiar if you are fans of the Mutilator movie and its forthcoming sequel, Mutilator 2. He is the director of both. We spent some time just kind of chopping it up about making the first one, where we're at with the second one, and just kind of what's to come of things. So sit back, relax, enjoy, and then we'll see you on the next one. Peace. So first and foremost, thank you for agreeing to hang out with us and for us to kind of, you know, talk Mutilator with you. We are a horror movie review podcast. So it's myself. We have a third co-host, Matt, who was unfortunately not able to make it this morning. And then Alan has been our most recent addition to the podcast because we're growing. But we actually covered Mutilator in our show about a year ago. And I remember it being just so fun. And I went back and I listened to our episode and it was just such a treat. And then the idea now that, you know, a year later, we're actually interviewing Buddy Cooper, it blows my mind. So thank you for agreeing to be here. It's awesome.
You make it sound like a big deal. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, I'm sure you know, Mutilator has a huge cult following. And so for us horror fans, you know, Mutilator is a big deal. So to talk to the person who actually created it is even bigger, in my opinion. So again, thank you.
Or Fall Break, whichever one you want to call it.
Yeah. So how you been?
Well, thank you. In spite of everything I try to do to make it otherwise, no, I'm fine.
That's awesome. Yeah, I can imagine it's probably been a little bit busy for you with Mutilator 2, you know, getting chopped around and, you know, coming out and probably keeping you on your toes.
An occasional podcast interview, sending screener out to reviewers. We had an offer from one distributor. And I sent the proposed contract to a lawyer in LA, and we've been back and forth a couple of times. I'm still waiting to hear his final comments before we proceed, but I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but at least there's some interest.
That's good. I can tell you amongst the horror community, everybody's looking to get their hands on it. Everybody wants to see it. I mean, the thing just won a hubby, you know, from Joe Bob Briggs. So that's awesome. Yeah. You know what I mean? So that stuff carries weight with the fans, even though, you know, distribution might be where it gets a little bit difficult. There's still an audience for it.
I'm glad to hear that. There were about 1,000 fans at Joe Bob's. But to drive in 6 big screens, that was a lot of fun seeing it on 6 screens all at once. But fans seemed to love it. I mean, they laughed in all the right places and oohed and aahed in all the right places. They even applauded at one place. It was the Saska sisters.
Right.
Jen and Sylvia suggested a kill in that thing. And we used it. And that's when that kill was on the screen. That's when the crowd loved it. That's when they... So
nice.
Thanks to Jen and Sue.
Nice. Yeah. They know what they're doing. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I figure we can start with talking a little bit about original Mutilator and then we can lead into Mutilator 2. The screener that was sent to us, we didn't realize that it was time-based. And so when we went to watch it, it was inaccessible. So Alan and I weren't, unfortunately, not able to see Mutilator 2. So we're going to rely on you to kind of fill in some gaps for us and just kind of give us some information on the movie.
I'm sorry that didn't work.
It's okay.
I don't understand why. He must have remailed an old one instead of sending you a fresh new link. I'm sorry maybe that happened.
Yeah, I know Alan went to watch it last night. I was going to watch it this morning, but then Alan let me know last night that it had expired. And then so when I tried it this morning, it also didn't work. So I said, it's okay. No big deal. That just means, you know, we get to hear about it fresh from the man who created it. It's all good.
Well, I can't say too much, of course, but the story is I tried to come up with an idea that would allow some of the talent, some of the cast from the Mutilator be in Mutilator 2 without being, wrong. And I came up with the idea that there would be a boot shoot film within a film.
Sure.
And the film within the film would be the remaking of the Mutilator. And it would be the last day of the shoot, going to be a rap party, and some of the talent from the original Mutilator had been invited to the party. So we get Ruthie Martinez and Bill Hitchcock in Mutilator 2.
I thought it was a really cool way to bring everyone back, because as I got a chance to watch the first like maybe 5 minutes before being pulled off by my youngest, and one of the things that caught me was right at the beginning. I'm like, wait a minute, am I watching the right version? Because it was a throwback to like the original, and I'm like, wait a minute, I must be watching something wrong. And then it rapidly changed into a different setting. And I was like, oh, okay, this is part two. All right. So like, the setup to me was just well executed. Like, even though I didn't get a chance to see the payoff, I like where you're going with that.
Thank you.
You know, what's funny about that too, is in going back and listening to our episode on the original Mutilator, I had the same reaction because, you know, up until the title credit, I thought I was watching Mutilator, but then when the title card shows, it says Fall Break. So I immediately was like, am I watching the right movie? It was on Shudder at the time. So I backed out of Shudder and it said The Mutilator. And then I started again and it said Fall Break. And I said, I don't think I'm watching the right movie. And then I had to look, and then sure enough, it was the exact same movie. I was like, oh, okay, that's weird, but let's do it. And I enjoyed it nonetheless. So I like correlations between the first two.
It was the original title was Fall Break, but we changed it.
Yeah. Oh, we know.
And somehow there's you saw it. There are a few copies out there somehow with the Fall Break. I don't know how they got out there.
You know, and it was a digital copy too. It was on a streaming service, so you would think that they'd have the right one, but somehow they found. Well, I guess technically that's the right one because it's the original. So
I thought somebody must have gotten a release print. That's the only thing I can think of that got, because they didn't get the negative.
Yeah.
But there were some release prints with Fall Break on them. So maybe they got it. Maybe they got one of those somewhere.
Got it.
Well, I knew I was in the right place when I heard that soundtrack because it kicked butt. I love that.
Good one on it. Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, I sang that for a while after our episode on Mutilator. It was so good. Yeah,
still am.
that's Michael Menard's genius at play there.
In the credits, it looked like you were a member of the band yourself. Like, I was interested in where you play the role.
We went to this recording studio in New York, Upper New York State. I can't remember the name of the place right now. And we were recording. We got to the part. It was the part where the guy says, "We're going on a
Fall break.
And so I was going to sing that, except the professional came strolling through the studio about that time, and Menard grabbed him and let him do that. So to keep me in the thing, I'm one of the people in the background doing this. They got my name on the credits.
Whatever you got to do.
That was a fun time.
That was
a fun day. I remember that day.
That's awesome. So, let's talk about Mutilator a little bit. Tell me where you come up with the story.
Oh, well, I live on one of the islands in the Outer Banks of North Carolina, Bogue Banks. And it's accessible by boat and by bridge. And at the time, the bridge was an old drawbridge. And it's a resort. It's a resort town. And Labor Day weekend is popular. There are a lot of people here Labor Day weekend. And the day after Labor Day, Tuesday, there's nobody here. Everybody goes home. A friend of mine and I were walking on the beach Tuesday after Labor Day, and you could see a mile in either direction and just nobody there. And it occurred to me, I've always wanted to make a movie, and it occurred to me, I read in Weekly Variety that a third of the tickets being sold at the time were being sold for low-budget horror movies. And I thought, if I might try to make a low-budget horror movie, I might have a chance of getting my money back. I'd read an article about going to film school. It said, if you get a job on a movie, you learn more than if you go to film school. So mm-hmm. I had a little bit of money saved up. I said, well, I'll make a movie. Maybe I'll learn how to make a movie. Low-budget horror picture, because we've got the stories always involve some kids getting isolated and picked off one at a time, usually. Mm-hmm. And so I said, we've got an isolated island here if the bridge is closed. And without that, it's still an island, fairly isolated. And so that led to, and I had the townhouse where the thing was shot, so I didn't have to buy a location, just use that one. And that just led to the idea of some kids going to the beach and being isolated, being alone, and being picked off. That's where it came up. I don't know how. And since we were at the beach, seemed like the thing to do would be to use nautical implements, nautical things as sure. implements of death. Yeah.
Like the gaffing hook.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're blowing my mind a little bit, because you're saying you had no experience, no pre-exposure. Your thought was just, I'll try making a movie. And then what you come out with is Mutilator.
That's it. Yeah.
That is insane to me.
I understood how movies work. My dad had made home movies, started with 8 and graduated to 16 when I was a small child. Yeah. Projector and he'd show movies. I understood how it worked. Frank, I'd written a couple of screenplays which weren't very good. And wrote this one. I wrote it. And I went to American University in Washington, D.C. in summer school. Took a course in screenwriting and film production just to make sure I knew what I thought I knew was about right. And it was about right. And I made fast friends with the screenwriting producer, professor, John Douglas, who ultimately came down and helped with the making of the movie and co-directed. And went to base on a name that John had given us, quite mesh. Talked with another DP, turned out to be Peter Schnall, who came down with things. I didn't have to know anything. They knew everything. And John Douglas came down from D.C. with a recently graduated student. The films all came together. It just did. It was good. It was a good, really good time. Everybody had a good time. Most of the pros from New York were single men, and most of the graduate students from D.C. were single women. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
At least one marriage resulted from that, several relationships and one marriage.
Yeah, that's a very PC of saying, describing, I'm sure, that whole event. Fun times.
It was good. Everybody got along.
Nice. Yeah, I noticed that one thing that stood out as part of like the kind of fun facts about Mutilator was that it was shot in chronological order, which is atypical of how most people will shoot and put together a movie. So considering what you're saying about how it all came together, that makes a little bit more sense. But honestly, if you watch the movie beginning to end, I don't think you can even really tell. I mean, I think it's irrelevant to anything other than just kind of it being a fun fact, but it came out really well being your guys' first venture.
Yeah. Everybody understands that they're not always shot in chronological order. Usually they're often based on availability of sets, locations, talent. Somebody can't work Wednesday, so we got to shoot all their stuff on Tuesday, that kind of thing. But we had everybody, we had all the sets, we had all the gear, we had all the people. So that wasn't a problem. And it just sort of started happening that way. We followed through, let it go. Just went through it.
Yeah,
I'm sure it made editing a little easier too. Being able to look at things in a chronological order versus moving things around so much.
Yeah.
I would think too that it's easier, not easier, but maybe more, there's some benefits to it from the cast perspective, because the cast knows what has come and what is going to come, you know? And so when you get into your scene, you already know what this character has been through, as opposed to kind of starting in the middle maybe and saying, okay, who is my character? Well, you know, what is the situation here? You've already lived it. You've already acted it. So, you know, you're kind of better to position to execute better.
Yeah, I agree. The continuity flows better.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody's with it. Yeah. 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 Exactly.
Yeah. So, it was shot in like 29 days. You guys did it in like a month. And what we hear, what we hear a lot is that when casts come together, they often kind of bunk with each other, and it helps with the camaraderie and relationship development, things like that. Was that true of Mutilator as well? Was everybody kind of hanging out with each other in that sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody was staying at the motel, the Oceana Motel, and they hung out together a lot and formed lasting bonds. They're still, 40 years later, they're still in touch with each other, emailing and texting, and Bill Hitchcock and Ruthie Martinez are close friends now. Matt and Francis were friends. Some of them are dead. Connie Rogers died about a year ago, huh?
Jack passed away as well, right?
Jack is about 96 now. He's in an assisted living facility, but he's kicking.
Understood.
I found out Maury Lampley died 20, 25 years ago, I found out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. How old was he?
I read somewhere that he was kind of the, how do I say this? He wasn't as open to hanging out with the cast as the rest of them were. And I think I even said in our episode that you can kind of tell that worked for him. I don't think he did it on purpose. I just think, from what I understand, he was less interested in the camaraderie and the relationship with the rest of the cast. He was more interested in kind of doing his own thing. But then the character he plays in the movie, that those traits kind of bleed through. And I thought, in my opinion, made for a better sell of his character.
Your conclusion. And I think your facts are accurate. We got to the point where Moore was not totally a loner, but took himself aside often. He wanted to lay out on the beach and work on his suntan. I had to expect more. You can't. You look blanched in this shot, and in the next shot, you're sunburned. That's not going to work. Stay out of the sun.
I didn't even think about it from that perspective. Yeah. That's funny.
And that sort of thing. He wanted to do his own thing. Yeah. Road makeup, everything.
It's understandable. Not everybody's going to, you know, feel and act the same way. So it's understood. But, you know, you get a good product out of it in the end. So, you know, it's all about the craft, the work. So that's good. Okay. So what's it like? So you shoot it, you're editing it, it's ready. What's it like trying to get it out there?
Well, you pass quickly over the editing part. That was a long, arduous process.
Familiar.
It was shot in 35, so you don't click a mouse to change anything. You
true.
Cut and glue and tape and unglue. And, we were novices, so we spent a lot more time doing it than a professional would have taken. But it was the work of love for all of us involved. I'll mention that Hugh Winborn, one of the editors, went on to win the Oscar for Crash a few years ago.
Oh,
excellent.
I don't think I saw that, but Crash is amazing. I love that movie. So from an editing perspective, I can understand. That's awesome.
But to answer your question, we went to LA, and rented a screening room, invited all the big distributors to come watch it. A few of them stayed for the whole thing. And we did something similar in New York, and just wasn't getting it. I had an offer from New Line. Guy said, he'd give you a P&A offer. I didn't know what P&A was. I was sitting in his office and he got a phone call and I was using his other phone. I'm in this guy's office. I can't remember his name right now. He was head of New Line. And I'm talking to somebody else and he's talking to somebody else. That was a fun scene for me. But there was a book, a blue book of distributors, and I contacted sub-distributor New York, Marvin Friedlander, and I screened it for him. And he and his assistant came 8 months in the back while we were screening. We got through and they were just grinning from ear to ear. And Marvin said, can you come to my office today about 4 o'clock? I said, hell yeah. We had shown Mueller in a drive-in in Texas and maybe one or two other places, and I missed a meeting with somebody out there. So I don't know what would have happened then. But Marvin said he could put together a network of distributors and wouldn't let him go. Yeah, we did. So he broke it in New York, in the Northeast. It did very well. To number 13 on Variety's weekly chart of top grossing films, and stayed on the chart for 6 weeks. I was proud of that.
Nice.
When we left, when we left New York and LA and places like that, couldn't get bookings because MPAA wouldn't give us a rating. They offered an X. We didn't want an X, which was porno at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And people wouldn't, I guess they were influenced by the MPAA, but we had trouble getting bookings. When we got bookings, the radio, television, newspaper wouldn't run our ads. So we lost bookings and had to go back to MPAA and cut out the good parts to get an R rating. And then it was not good. Who cared about a horror movie without any gore, right?
Right.
And Marvin Friedlander, incidentally, is the guy who made us change the name. He's the distributor. And he said, well, Bud, now we need an ad campaign. I said, Marvin, we got one. We had a trailer, we had a poster, we had radio spots, TV spots. He said, let me see it. So I showed him everything. He said, Bud, I got to tell you, it's shit, top to bottom. So he sent us to an ad company around the corner, and they came up with the poster and the slogan. There's kind of a funny story about the poster. They had an artist who painted the picture of the kids hanging on the wall, and they got through, and the girl in the front in the bikini had legs which were, let's say, she didn't have thin thighs. And okay. I said, no, we can't. No, that girl's supposed to be alluring. And so, all right, so he got another bottle in, changed the legs, called me in. And I said, yeah. I said, can I meet her? And he said, not with those legs.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize, because I'm looking at the poster now, but it is definitely done. Now that you say that it's hand-drawn, it's a painting, it totally makes sense. And it came out really well, too. So by sword, by pick, by axe, bye-bye. That's the slogan the marketing company came up with?
Some secretary over there came up with that, yeah. And we all loved it.
Yeah, it's great. How did the idea for the theme song for Fall Break / Mutilator come about? Because it is very atypical of a horror movie theme song.
As I said, Mike Menard wrote that. And he and a friend of his friend wrote the lyrics to Under the Boardwalk. You might remember that old hit song from years ago in the 60s, I guess, 70s. Michael asked what I wanted it to be like, and I told him it was a beach, shot at the beach, and went beach music. I don't know if you knew beach music in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
But in Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, there's a dance called the Shag. Kind of a shuffling dance.
Okay.
And it's always, the music is always falls in a general category known as beach music. I said, what's some beach music? So I sent him a couple of records of beach music. He's got the genius. Oh, you listen to it one time. Okay, I got it. And he wrote the song, and he and his friend wrote the lyrics, and I did this, and there we had a song.
How was
Michael
that?
Menard, it's all his.
How was the song received, right? Because you got somebody telling you need a different ad campaign, you're coming up with different slogans, but everybody was on board with that song. And don't get me wrong, I love that song, and I'm glad that it's there because it's catchy.
Yeah, people like that. People like that song.
it's identifiable, right? You hear it and you know exactly what it is. Like, I'll liken it to, you know, like the theme song to Halloween, right? You just, you hear it and you know exactly what it is. So if I hear Fall Break, I know exactly what that movie is. So I'm curious, in the discussions about how we market this movie and we're getting it out in front of some people, how is it received? Because I know right now people do love it.
Like, yeah, when it first came out, the young people were dancing to it, which was, it's got the right tempo for it.
Yeah.
And some witty person locally wrote a parody. I can't remember. And somewhere I have a copy of it, but it was popular and they played it on the local radio station. It was a parody of the Fall Break Zach, but it was funny. It was witty. God, I wish I'd find it now.
I gotta put my Google skills to the test and see if I can't find a copy of that parody. I'd love to hear it.
I'd love to hear it too.
I'm always interested to know, what were some of your influences in, you know, getting this story up and running? I know you talked about your influence for making the movie, but I'm curious, did you, you know, you said your dad had experience with some cameras, so you had some exposure there, but like from a horror perspective, like why a horror movie, and what, maybe what horror movies had you seen that kind of motivated you to make and write Mutilator?
I've always liked horror movies from the beginning. As I said earlier, I read an article in Wiki Variety which said that 30% of the tickets being sold at that time were sold for low budget horror movies.
Mm-hmm.
And words low budget attracted me. And my plan was to make two low budget horror movies. I figured by the end of that time, I would really know how to make a movie and I could make something else. And so that's what led me to make a horror movie. It was as much an economic decision as anything.
Now you say you were looking to make two. Now there's a pretty big gap between the second one.
Well, it took a long time to get my money back. No, it took a little while to get my money back. But then I got led astray with things like children, college,
life,
and family, and everything got in the way. I never gave up. What can I say? I always wanted to do another one. And I still want to do another one. What can I say about that?
Now you got the two under your belt. Looking off for the next.
Yeah, I was asking about potential influences because we talked when we did Mutilator that we got Friday the 13th vibes a lot, right? Very kind of, but I feel like a lot of the slasher movies follow the same trope. I mean, we just interviewed a different actor in Australia last night and we were talking about how in that movie we were reviewing, all the teens, you know, they split up, they get separated, and then they start getting picked off one by one, which is exactly what you just said kind of at the beginning of this of our story here. And so, you know, that's there's always going to be that blueprint for these types of slashers. But I remember calling out that there, you know, this movie gave me a lot of Friday the 13th vibes. And so I was just curious to know if there was any one or a few movies that you saw and wanted to kind of incorporate or, you know, duplicate that style here, or maybe something that influenced you in a way to do something particular for Mutilator.
No, not any one in particular. For a few years prior to making the Mutilator, I wrote I was the movie critic for the local theaters. And let me tell you, that was a blast. They'd change the movies Thursday night and something new running on Friday. So I'd get there late Thursday night after the screening, get free Pepsi, free popcorn, and I'd get to see the movies. I'd be all alone in the theater. And I saw all of the horror movies. Nice. And I was no doubt influenced by all of them.
Nice.
I can't think of any particular one. There's some individual kills that stand out. The genre was made just as we've said, a bunch of kids go somewhere, get isolated, get picked off one at a time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think at least one of the attractions of Mutilator is that the picking off is a little unusual, or maybe at least some of them.
Yeah.
It's interesting how you squared in on that, because like I almost felt like when I was watching the movie that Big Ed, just kind of diving into the movie, Big Ed, his intent wasn't necessarily all the friends to get them. It was to get the son. Like he stewed for years about what happened, and now it's his time to get back, and the friends just so happen to be there, and he's like, well, all right, I guess my job just got bigger.
Yeah, the more the merrier.
Right.
You know, I couldn't help but notice that Big Ed didn't have any lines in the movie.
Most people don't notice that.
Was that intentional?
It never, that was unintentional. It just worked out that way. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's easy to, for me, I guess in my brain, to draw that correlation to someone like Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees, because these are serial killers, slashers, who don't ever speak in their films. And then we got Big Ed, who never speaks. I mean, he cries out a little bit in the beginning when his wife is dead, but other than that, we don't hear anything from him. So that's why I was like, oh, that's done really well, you know, and indicative of a good slasher movie.
Seems like he has one line when he's hanging on the back of the car, and Pam is backing the car into the block wall.
Yeah.
I think he hollers, no.
Oh, maybe. I might have mistook that for like a groan. Michael
likes it good now, I think so.
Yeah, I might have mistaken that for a groan, like, oh. So we were talking a little bit about Big Ed, no lines, unintentional. We've kind of wrapped up on Mutilator. Things are out. I'm just curious, was there anything, like any moments during the shoot where that really kind of stood out to you, or, you know, something that maybe happened on set where you're like, oh, my, this is like one of my favorite stories from, you know, making this film?
Yes.
too many to count.
One, early one morning before sunrise, we were shooting all night. We were getting ready to kill Linda in the swimming pool. And the gag was a spear was going to come through her body. Mm-hmm. The wings of the spear would open up and she would be tugged down, bloody water gurgling. And we're sitting on the porch at the condo waiting for a special effects team and checking the sun about to come up. It's got to be a night scene. And after a while, they came up, kind of towed the ground and said, we can't do it. What do you mean you can't do it? We just can't get it to work. God, no. You know, we got to. I said, fuck it, we'll drown her. We took her over and we drowned her.
You know what's so what's so funny about
in
that?
In slow motion, you know, it kind of works. Those hands come out and the music's good.
Oh, yeah, 100%. We called that out in our recap of Mutilator. We identified that. And I specifically said to my co-host, Matt, I said, you know, they were supposed to do this thing where, you know, Linda dies with a spear in the pool. And I would have loved to have seen how they pull that off, right? Because how is this guy in the pool with a spear gun and nobody noticed? And then I can imagine all the blood in the pool would have made for a really good aesthetic. And then they tried and they couldn't pull it off. And so I would imagine they just sat around set and was like, fuck it, just drown her. Who cares? Let's get it done and move on. And that's exactly how it happened. That's awesome.
We poured milk in the pool. I don't know if you knew that.
I did. Yeah.
To make it cloudy so you couldn't see him under the water, peeking under the water.
Yeah. I will say one of the things that I called out in our review of the movie was that the practical effects were done so well. Just it's awesome when you see him done like that, because it just gives it a more realistic vibe, and I think it adds to you know, kind of the scare factor to the movie when it looks so real life.
That's an interesting observation. And I know that the people I've talked to, the fans, prefer practical effects over CGI.
Absolutely.
Anywhere you can, please. Yeah. Oh, I'm saying anywhere you can fit in practical effects, I'd prefer that, because it looks so much more real. And you can, I know you can do a lot with computer generated images or, you know, computer special effects, but when it comes to the kills and the gore and stuff like that, the practical is the way to go.
especially as we're getting more and more into the digital age, being able to see, like, you know, people's art in their with their bare hands and not with the digital equipment. That, not to take away anything from our CGI friends out there, but that practical effects just, they hit differently.
Well, yeah, I think when you take the Mutilator that's shot in 35 millimeter and then you put it on 4K and I'm watching it on my 4K television, things are going to bleed through a little bit better and you're going to be able to easily identify, you know, little things here and there. And so when it's seamless and the practical effect just looks natural, you're like, hey, that looks great. As opposed to saying, oh, I can see all the green screen and it looks fake. And it takes, I don't know, for me, it's distracting and it takes away from the experience of the movie. So when you have great practical effects that render up in 4K and it looks amazing, it still holds true. It's a much better experience for me and I enjoy it that much better. So good job on the practicals. Those are awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate your observation there. Yeah, that's I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad to know that. I had never thought about it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Mutilator's out. It's got some success. You know, it's on the charts for a while. And then there's, like Alan said, there's a large gap between Mutilator 1 and Mutilator 2. And it was ironic because when we were doing the review on Mutilator 1, it's when Mutilator 2 was just kind of being discussed and or just getting off the ground a little bit. And again, it's full circle for me because the only reason we're talking today is because of super producer Ryan James, right? We're a huge fan of everything that he does. And he's a big supporter of our show. And I got to say here and now, thank you to Ryan James for making this whole connection happen. And to befriend him and then find out that he's in Mutilator 2 and then find out that he can hook me up with Buddy Cooper.
My favorite character.
Oh, he's so good. Yeah. I love Ryan. He's always on and he always delivers. Love that guy. So I'm curious to know why Mutilator 2? Like what led you to decide, okay, now is A, I want to do this, and B, now is the time.
Really? I always wanted to do it. We were talking about sequel before we were through shooting the first one, coming up with funny ideas for Big Ed to pop up here and there. And why now? I didn't have the money, for one thing.
Sure.
And, you know, we started actually in 18 or 19. Then the pandemic came. Jack Chatham was on board at that time. And Connie Rogers was, and afterwards, Jack had just aged out, and Connie died. She died. Money and other things delayed it. I never thought wanted to do it, and just finally got to the point. Said, "Yeah, I'm just gonna go ahead and do it." And it was that. I don't have any better explanation.
No. I mean, you know, is there ever really a good one? You know, I wasn't sure if it was, you know, fan demand, things like that, people chomping at the bit to see the new Mutilator. And I know that when, you know, it started production, people were excited to get on board and be part of it because they all loved the first one so much. So who wouldn't want to be part of the second one?
Yeah, the talent and the crew were excited about it and looking forward to it and wanted to be part of it. James is a good example. Everybody was. I'm still impressed with the act, with the talent. They were just, they're really good. All of them really, really good.
Yeah, and I can imagine, you know, some of the cast coming together for this one, and you know, a bit of nostalgia for them, and being able to kind of pick up where they left off, you know, 40 years ago, right? 84? Mutilator came out.
Yeah,
40 years later. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So I know you said earlier, you know, just kind of waiting on distribution at this time and, you know, hoping to get it out there soon. But is there anything you'd like to, you know, maybe just kind of keep the fans in the know of or, you know, put out there for the fans to kind of, while we're all waiting for Mutilator 2 to come to surface up?
I told you about where we are with distribution of Mutilator 2. People keep asking when we're going to see it. We're going to see it. It's been screened here and there on the rare occasion. It was at Joe Bob's Jamboree in Las Vegas in October. I'm going to screen it at Creature Feature in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania next month.
Nice.
28th, 29th. Other than that, I don't know. That is somebody like you, you get a chance to see it. I just got my fingers crossed and I keep talking to people trying to stir it up. You know, if any sort of help from the fans would be appreciated. I don't know what that would mean. Call your favorite streamers, hey, get this on there or whatever. Anyhow, anybody's got any clues or advice, my ears are open.
I hear you. Yeah, we'll start putting some feelers out and see what we can do to help, because I know we're not the only ones who are waiting to see it. So, like I said, there's a big following for Mutilator. So, get some people to take some action and get this movie out there.
Okay, I'll see that you get a fresh link too.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. Not a problem. What I thought might be cool, once you start getting it out there, maybe doing some double features, right? Mutilator 1 and 2.
That's going to happen in Gettysburg.
Oh, that's cool. See, out here on the West Coast, we have some conventions every once in a while, but I don't feel like we get them as thoroughly as like the East Coast does. I feel like these conventions on the East Coast just have such talent and they're so full. And then here they exist, but not in the way that I see them existing on the East Coast. So I'm a little jealous of that stuff.
You got airplanes. Have you heard of airplanes? No.
Yes, but they also require a lot of money. So start saving my cans.
Any proprietors of these events might be so glad to have you guys come out there and do a show from the thing. Be good for them. I want to support you some.
Yeah, I've approached a couple of these events and said, hey, what do you think about having a live podcast there? What we do is review horror movies, so we could set it up or we can show some stuff and have people sit in as they kind of walk through the conventions and things like that. And they can, talk about their experiences and their favorite movies. We did it once before a couple years ago. I think Alan was there. This is before he was on and, he got to see what that looked like, but we'd love to do it more often. Not everybody's chomping at the bit to get podcasters into their convention. So it is what it is.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, great. I mean, like I said, we're excited for Mutilator 2 to hit the ground, and if we can get a new link, we'll check it out for sure. But I think you made some really good product. Everybody loves what you've put out with Mutilator 1. So I wouldn't imagine that anybody wouldn't love Mutilator 2. So I'm excited for everybody to see it and, just what's to come with it, because everyone seems to have a good time with it. So thank you for doing what you do.
Okay.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it, man. This was great. It's
been my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Alan, see you.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, buddy. Have a great rest of your weekend.